And welcome back to the Second and Two podcast. I'm your host, TB. I've got my co-host, producer extraordinaire, and no longer closeted Rams fan because they're in the playoffs at the same time as the Broncos, and he's rooting for the Rams more. Jody! What's up, Joe? What's yeah, put it on.
You know, you missed one that applies to both of us today with people with new haircuts starting off the year fresh, quite literally. You know what I mean? Getting done up right, feel good, look good, play good. You know the words. Yeah, we're here. Gonna do, like, I don't know if we mentioned it yet, but we're starting off the NFL news. We'll get you guys a playoff schedule, awards, and all that from last week on a different episode going forward. We're hitting you with the quick little.
It's a double episode week.
Yeah, you're getting two for one. The people.
It's like free football overtime.
Yeah, we got college breakdown today. I don't know if you had to hit the double record this time around or not, for if we're blessed with some film, hopefully. If not, I understand it's going to be too hard to put out. But yeah, we got a lot of football this week for y'all. So keep in touch with that. We got some news though off rip, right? First one. I'm going to hit you with some sad news first. There's a lot of sad news on this list this week, but speaking of Rams, you brought it off rip. It might get moved to Arizona, and that's tragic.
Yeah, so the NFL released their the game plan for that. Essentially, they want to play the game at SoFi on Monday night. However, if they cannot, they will move the game to Arizona at State Farm Stadium.
Arizona Cardinals spot. Glendale.
And it would still be up Monday at the same time. So the time won't move, but the venue could potentially. I mean, obviously, the wildfires in California has unfortunately felt like it's become like a yearly event. This is kind of a weird timing, I guess. I don't know. I guess I wasn't expecting it to happen in January.
Yeah.
But it's devastating, you know, for the area, and so many people getting evacuated from their homes, just really scary. And I, you know, being from there, obviously, you know, heart goes out to all those people and everyone who's being affected by this, hoping that, you know, everyone stays safe, but also, you know, just hope you don't lose too much of your stuff and all of that, and that you can get back to your homes as soon as possible safely. So, obviously, our thoughts and prayers from the pod are going out to those people in LA.
Also, shout out to firefighters putting in the work to contain it all as best they can. I had a work thing today, started early, and we got to meet with like the head of the departments in the city, and one of the ladies like, yeah, my husband's a firefighter in Santa Barbara. He's actually down there now working and all that. So it's just crazy how all the firefighters got to convene in a central location to get the thing done. So shout out to all of them putting in the hard work and in the terrible disaster from the fire. So,
speaking of more difficult news,
yeah,
I think we'll get right into it. We got to talk about the coaching carousel, which obviously means we got to know which jobs are open. So we're gonna have to name dudes who got fired. So. Here's the list so far. Jerod Mayo out after 1 year with the Patriots. Really, really tough look for the organization. Tough for Jerod Mayo. Did he make mistakes? Yes. Did he come off at times as wishy-washy or like not, you know, sticking to things that he would say in a press conference on a Tuesday and then doing something different on a Sunday? Like, yes, all those things are true. However, it just felt like, man, he was like the coach in waiting for like years. And then he only gets 1 year to actually try and do the job with a very similar roster to what Bill Belichick had the year before. And they ended up with the same record, 4-13. So really tough. Like the GOAT didn't do very well with that team the year before. And then you're asking a rookie head coach with a rookie quarterback to do better. I guess that's just, it seems like the expectations are a little unfair. I'm sure it was a tough decision, but man, that tough look too. Doug Peterson, out in Jacksonville after I believe it's been 3 years there. It looked promising early, right? The first year they go to the playoffs, They have the miraculous comeback against the Chargers and they get to the divisional round. And then you come back the next year and they miss the playoffs, and you come back this year and it's a disaster. Yeah. And Trevor Lawrence has seemingly gotten worse each year under Doug Peterson. And that's just it's just a tough look. I mean, for a coach who's won a Super Bowl, right? It's a tough end. I don't expect he gets many more opportunities, at least to be a head coach in the NFL after that. So tough for Doug Peterson. Next up, Lou Anarumo. Out. The Cincinnati defensive coordinator after 6 years. And truthfully, at multiple coaching cycles where he got head coach interest. That defense did not perform up to standard this year, and it's why they missed the playoffs. I don't know that I blame him as much as personnel issues. However, it's the NFL, and the expectation is you've got dudes figured out. And so that's kind of what happens with that. It's a results-based business. And even though you had 5 previous years of great results, you know, the 1 year of not good results is going to outweigh that.
Albert Einstein meme on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You got one question wrong on the 9 times table.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're getting knocked for that and not all other correct ones.
Next up, Ryan Grubb. Out after 1 year in Seattle as their offensive coordinator. Clearly, Mike McDaniel did not feel like the offense performed at the level that it needed to. They missed the playoffs,
right?
They missed the playoffs by not even a game. They were tied with the Rams at the end of the day, and lost the tiebreaker in week 18. So, Ryan Grubb, you know, was not going to be back as the Seattle OC. Rand Carthon, the Titans GM, 2 years on that job. You know, he won the power struggle last year with Mike Vrabel, fired him, was able to bring in his guy, Brian Callahan. And yet after 1 year of that, the ownership group obviously decided that decision no longer looked like a good one. So Rand Carthon obviously was relieved of his duty as well. Ken Dorsey out as the Browns offensive coordinator a year after losing his job in the middle of the season with the Bills as their offensive coordinator. So tough back-to-back couple years there for Ken Dorsey. Don't expect he'll be getting another OC job here anytime soon.
Doesn't sound like he should. I mean, especially last year, didn't the Bills turn their season around after he was gone?
Yeah, and then the Joe Brady came in that is exactly what happened. Gus Bradley, the Colts defense coordinator, who survived a couple regimes there, did get fired by Shane Steichen.
Saturday.
And so he will no longer be back. And lastly, the most recent firing, Antonio Pierce out as the Raiders head coach after, again, one season. So tough. I mean, just a lot of guys getting short leash, man. A lot of short leashes right now. It's a results-based business. I get it. But, man, to get one season, it feels brutal. I'm not gonna lie. And the Raiders, man, they're still paying Gruden and
I was gonna say that dude's pocket's gotta be hurting right now.
Yeah. They're still paying Gruden and who was the Josh McDaniel and now Antonio Pierce. Like, man, they're gonna be paying like 4 coaches next year with one guy on the sideline. Coaches who have been retained, and by retained we mean like it has been announced they will be back. Shane Steichen will be back along with the GM there in Chris Ballard in Indianapolis. Those guys are coming back despite the heat from Pat McAfee. They're keeping their jobs. Brian Daboll and Joe Shane will be back in New York despite the heat they got for letting Saquon walk. Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer will be back in Miami. Again, despite the heat that they took. We'll see. And then Trent Baalke currently is keeping his job as the Jaguars GM, despite them firing Doug Peterson. So Trent Baalke now survived 2 coaches. I don't know. So you could have easily made a case for any of those guys to have been fired over some of the guys who were. And every organization's different. None of them run the same. But it is interesting who got fired, who got retained, and how that all shook out. But we'll see, you know, how some of these jobs get filled. We also obviously already had the Bears, Jets, and Saints jobs open. from earlier in the season, mid-season firings there. So plenty of jobs that are open right now. I, off the top of my head, counting it, I believe there are 6 open NFL head coaching jobs right now. We'll see if any more open, but certainly, you know, we're monitoring the Cowboys and what they're doing with Mike McCarthy. They haven't made a decision on that yet. Could be a possible another opening there.
Yeah, I would assume so, but you never know.
The Bears tried to interview him, and the Cowboys blocked him from interviewing. Oh. So that might suggest that they're trying to get a deal done to bring him back. We'll see. Interesting. With all of that, I did have one major question in my head. It seems like Mike Vrabel's going to end up being the next Patriots head coach, right?
He's got to be.
I kind of feel like that's maybe the reason they fired Mayo, is because they had the inkling that, like, we can get Vrabel, and we think Vrabel's kind of like mini Belichick, and that's kind of what we want to get back to. So let's just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, feels take like a shot that at our would guy be now.
If we can bring in another Patriot to do it the Bill Belichick way, feels like that might be why they fired Gerard Mayo after a year, or it could be a primary factor. You know, Gerard, it's not you; it's the fact that we can get Vrabel, right? Like, you know.
I was going to say, I think he's only taken a thing with the Jets, a meeting with the Jets. So we'll see what happens with that.
He interviewed with the Bears, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That is interesting. That could be something right there. Their defense has been nice.
So moving on to lighter news, like Week 18 delivered some awesome games. Bunch of divisional matchups that were decided in the final moment. So two of them even went to overtime. So Week 18, it delivered. Even though there were a lot of them that were meaningless, there were just enough that were meaningful, that had something on the line, where teams were playing hard, even if they had backup quarterbacks in or whatever was going on, it still delivered. There's nothing like the NFL product right now, man. It's incredible that they can still deliver those games in Week 18 when some of them are meaningless and got backup quarterbacks in, and it's still fun to watch. The Bengals obviously missed the playoffs, even though they won. They did not get the help they needed from Denver.
Yeah.
And they blew the Titans,
out Carson Wentz.
The Titans, who now have a GM opening, secured the number one pick by losing.
That's great. Travis Hunter on watch.
A quarterback, maybe. Will Levis does not appear to be their guy.
Well, if that's the route they go, they just wasted that pick on him a couple years back. So.
I know, it's crazy. I mean, they drafted Malik Willis a few years ago, then they draft Levis a couple years ago, then now they're going to be on quarterback number 3 within 4 drafts, probably. I mean, they're going
to
take another.
They're about to be the new Browns at this rate.
Yeah. Okay, so we covered some of the NFL, basic NFL news here. We do want to get to, and tune in, before the games on Saturday. We are going to release a wildcard weekend preview pod. We'll also include our Week 18 awards on that episode, so that's coming soon. But we wanted to get you this CFP preview. The games are, you know, we're recording on a Wednesday night here. The games are tomorrow. You know, Notre Dame, Penn State is tomorrow, and then Texas, Ohio State is Friday. We want to get this out and record it up before those games happen so that you guys can, you know, hear our thoughts before they happen and, you know, use them as you will. the first game, and this line was from this weekend, so lines I'm sure by now have changed, but Notre Dame was a 2-point favorite versus Penn State at the Orange Bowl in Miami, Florida. First up, first key, Notre Dame. Can they win the rushing battle in this game? They ran for 154 yards against the Georgia team that allowed 131 rush yards a game. Actually, Georgia, you'd be surprised, kind of a mid-rush defense. You know, generally, you'd expect them to be a little bit more stout. And dogs, yet, even still, Notre Dame really outgained them on the ground. Penn State's defense, however, they only gave up 108 yards to Boise State, who had one of the better rushing attacks. Obviously, we knew about Ashton Jeanty and all that in college football. And they're giving up just over 100 yards a game. So on the flip side, Penn State averages 202 rushing yards per game, and Notre Dame is allowing 127 per game. So I think it's a tall task for Notre Dame is what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
Notre Dame, they're going to need to run for more yards than Penn State, I think, to win this game, because I don't think Notre Dame's passing attack is consistent enough that if they're not outgaining Penn State on the ground, that they can win this game. Now, I think they're good enough up front, and I think their talent in the backfield offensively is enough that they can do that, that they can beat Penn State on the ground, despite what maybe some of the numbers here we're looking at are suggesting. But I do think that's their way to win, is they got it. They have to be able to do that. And it's a tall task. On the Penn State side, Drew Aller has played like the best quarterback in the playoff to this point. He's done it against fairly average defenses, I would say, with SMU and Boise State. The question is, can he keep it up?
Fair point.
Right? If he plays this way, they can win the whole thing. He not only needs to avoid those critical turnovers, though, but he's going to need to be very good to stretch that Notre Dame vertical, that Notre Dame secondary vertically. That Notre Dame secondary is very good. They played well against Georgia. I know Georgia had the backup quarterback, but truthfully, Gunnar Stockton played well. He handled himself well. He made a couple throws that were nice. Some of the Georgia receivers dropped balls, as they have all season. But also the Notre Dame secondary is very good. And so I do think, you know, Aller tested Boise State in the vertical game a ton. And I think he's going to need to do the same thing against Notre Dame. But Notre Dame has more talent on the back end than Boise State does. So it's going to be a tall task for Aller to keep this up as well. So this is a really interesting game, because I think if the Penn State passing attack is legit, they win. And by the same token, I think if Notre Dame can beat Penn State on the ground, they will win. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of big challenges there. But, you know, Jody, we wanted to look at maybe a prop bet in this game. There's something that caught your eye.
Yeah, so it kind of ties in with your key from Notre Dame when I was crunching my numbers. So Riley Leonard has a line of 159.5 for passing yards. Crunching the numbers, I was like, I'm taking the under. He doesn't throw the ball all too much. He's more of a runner, right? But Penn State also allows the people that play against them to throw for anything way more, like at least 200 more often than not, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of ties in with yours where he needs to be able to throw the ball consistently. And I think it's very doable against Penn State. It's just the only thing that worries me is there's been several games where Notre Dame will rotate quarterbacks. And so I think they'll pass as a team definitely over 160. Is it all Riley Leonard? I couldn't tell you with certainty.
Would say Leonard, like they played in so many. I know you're looking at like box scores and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They played in so many blowouts.
That they let other people like come that, in.
Yeah. Like Riley Leonard's their dude.
They're getting Arch Manning time, huh?
Yeah. They ain't putting anybody else in the game. In this game, nobody else is playing. Yeah. You can be safe with feeling comfortable with Riley Leonard. If they're throwing the ball, Riley Leonard's the one doing it.
All right. Then, yeah, I would say, so what I wrote down, it says, I am taking Riley Leonard under 159.5 passing yards. And I said, actually, that's a cap statement. Don't believe that. If the coaches learn anything from the film, is that the QBs that Penn State normally play hit that number more often than not. So they should be throwing the rock. That's where I'm rolling.
Okay.
Taking the over on the 159.5.
Jody's throwing it on the table. All right. What you got on the over-under? What's your read on the over-under for this game?
So for this little preview, what I saw that was 45. I like the over. Both teams tend to blow that number out the water just with like their own scoring, so I think this should be a lot of points. I also had – you didn't write it down. I was nervous if you wanted me to pick the spread or not, so I did that for both. Well, I'll be giving you guys 6 picks. So I got the over 45, and I do have Notre Dame covering. I saw that 1.5. You saw that too. Still like it regardless.
Yeah.
That's what I got for this okay. game right here.
I think the over-under is – it's funny because, you know, I'm going to give you my prediction here. Mm-hmm. I think the over-under is right on the head of like about where it should
Vegas
be.
Is too
these
good.
Offenses – these offenses are able to score well, I think, and they've both shown that in the playoff. But I also think both of their defenses are playing at such an elite level that we might, and sometimes in these big games, especially in college, when teams tighten up, the defenses usually tend to play better. And that's usually where you see less points.
Yeah.
In terms of where I think the game's going to go, I think I was so I predicted a Notre Dame win over Georgia, but the way in which they did it, they were dominant, and they were dominant on the line of scrimmage, which impressed me more than I thought they could. Basically, going into that game, I trust Notre Dame up front on both sides of the ball. In a way that I don't think you've ever been able to say about a Notre Dame football team in this century, right?
Yeah.
So with that being said, I think they are going to be able to win the ground game, and I think they are going to be defensively equipped to not allow Drew Aller to take it over with his arm. And so I have Notre Dame winning the game 23-21. Like I said, it's real close to the point total there. And when I make these predictions, I'm not looking at the over-under or looking at that point total or what the spread is, which is hilarious because, again, it's also right on where the spread is at. So technically, if you're going by what I'm saying, if it's up 45 and it's Notre Dame by 1.5, then I'm telling you to take Notre Dame to cover and with the under, but not by a point, not by much.
You could just buy it down, honestly.
And the cover is not by much either. I mean, in some cases, it might be a push if you're getting two. Yeah. So I do expect a great game. I'm very excited for it. I do think both teams are playing at the best level that we've seen either team play at in years. Mm-hmm. I think both teams, for the first time probably in the playoff era, have a legitimate shot to win the whole thing. I do think the winner from this game has a shot to win it all, regardless of who comes out the other side. And I think the confidence of whoever wins this game, having won three in a row going into that national championship, will feel very good. So excited for that. So moving to Friday's game, we have Texas and Ohio State, who when I last looked was a 6-point favorite at the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic in Arlington, Texas. First up, the key for Texas. Can they put together a complete game?
Very true.
This Texas team is arguably as talented as Ohio State, in my mind, especially up on the line of scrimmage. And yet they're a 6-point dog here because they failed to put together a full game this season. They have essentially sleptwalked their way to the CFP semifinal. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Their schedule was fairly easy, right? They beat the teams they were supposed to. Hey, they lost a tough one to Georgia. They went to the SEC championship game. They lost another tough one to Georgia because they could not put together a complete game in either one of those cases. And Georgia was the only team on their schedule that was good enough to beat them when they did that. And in the playoff, truthfully, they've played Clemson and Arizona State. And again, have not played a complete game against either one of those teams. Both those teams were good enough to make it close, but not good enough to beat them. That is not the case with the team you're playing Friday.
Yeah.
If Texas doesn't play four full quarters, they get blown out Friday.
No doubt.
And it's amazing that they're here, and I'm saying they've sleptwalked here. That's like indicative of their talent, but it's also cause for serious concern because can they? They've gone through a whole – I mean, they've played whatever it is, 14 or 15 games, and they haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
So you have to start asking, are they capable? They need the clutch version of Quinn Ewers that we talked about on the pod last week for the whole game.
Yeah, overtime,
They can't go into halftime with a lead and then decide to just not play the third quarter like they've done, in the last two CFP games. They got to play a complete game, and it's that simple for them. I mean, that it's a very like coach speaky thing. Play a complete game, but it's the truth for them. There's not like nothing else really matters if these guys aren't going to play for four quarters. And that's I'm Sark, that's all I'm focused on. If you guys play for four quarters, you're good enough to beat anybody. So it doesn't matter what the game plan is or who we're playing against or what they do or XYZ. It's about us. It's about play our best football for four quarters. And that's what it's going to take to win this game. If they don't, they're not winning. I can just tell you that Ohio State team is too good. Now, on the flip side, for Ohio State, I think there's a very obvious change in what they've done in these two games compared to how they kind of finished their season, obviously, against Michigan. And that's dominating the line of scrimmage. Can they continue doing that? I mean, against Oregon, they outgained them 181 to negative 23 on the ground. Now, part of that was they had the lead for the whole game. Oregon stopped trying to run the ball, right? That's part of it, yes. However, Ohio State was able to play like a ton of three high safety looks, and that wasn't just later. It was early too, when that game was still in the balance, and they stopped Oregon's run game with three high safeties. If they're able to do that, and Caleb Downs is able to just roam the way he was, you're in some serious trouble against that defense. They're freaking talented. They created explosives on the ground and in the air on offense, and ultimately they dominated the rushing battle in that game. It's going to be a lot harder to replicate that against Texas, in my opinion. I expect Texas to dare Ohio State to run the ball, much like Michigan did, because they're going to try and take away the passing attack. They're going to say, look, Jeremiah Smith's not going to beat us. Like, Travion Henderson and Quichon Jenkins need to. That's how you're going to have to beat us. And that's what Michigan did, right? They kept two high safeties. They doubled, and you know, they played split safety stuff where they doubled to Jeremiah Smith's side. They told Will Howard, you're going to have to look elsewhere in the progressions. And they said, Chip Kelly, we're going to give you 5 and 6 man boxes and go ahead and try and run it. Now, they had two All-Americans inside, and so they were still able to stop the run game with those 6 man boxes. But you know, Texas can replicate some of that. They have the dudes that they can do that. They also have the secondary guys that can match up and play elite ball there. So I think they have the secondary and the talent to slow down the Ohio State passing attack. So I think that means Ohio State's going to need to be successful running the ball, because if they're not, they may struggle on offense like they did against Michigan. And we know the Texas offense is good enough to put up enough points in that situation to win the game. All right. So those are the keys as I see it. Jody, what do you think is your favorite prop bet in this game?
All right. So I see the game playing out a little differently than you do. A little spoiler there. But when I was looking at it, the running back for Texas, Quintrevion Wisner, when they lose games, he tends to not be running the rock. Not very well, I should say. So if I think that Texas is going to lose this game, I am going to be fading his prop of 16.5 rushing yards, because I don't believe that they're going to pull it off. And that tends to be the trend. If they're not winning, they're struggling running the ball. And I don't know how well the Ohio State like front core is, but the way I see the game playing out in my head, I don't think they're going to be winning this one. So that's where I'm going with this. That's where my head at with this prop bet. For the over under though, I am also rolling the over on this game. I think that the Ohio State University scores at will, and if it isn't a close game, I said they will still get their numbers up. I also like the Ohio State. I had them at the Ohio State at 5.5, but I saw you had the 6. I also think they're going to win by the spread. So, Mitch, I hope you didn't listen to any of that, but if it happens, I gave you a fair warning.
Okay. This was the hardest game, I think, of the playoffs so far for me to pick.
I agree.
Because I obviously believe in Texas's talent. You know, if you can see the board behind me, I picked them to win it all. When this whole start of this whole thing happened, you know, and you fill out the bracket, I picked Texas as the team that I thought would win the whole thing. I still think they're capable of that. But obviously the last two playoff games, I explained that, you know, they sleepwalk. They go through lulls. And I know Ohio State is too good to do that. They will roll you. They showed that against Oregon, right? Oregon came out sleepwalking. They rolled those dudes. I do think Ohio State is on a mission. I do think they're playing the toughest brand of football that they've played in years under Ryan Day. And I do think there were moments where I said, man, Ohio State's going to roll in this game. But the more I looked at it, I went back, watched the film, thought about it some more. I think it's hard to get college football kids to play the way that Ohio State has played in those last two games. I think it's hard to replicate that a third game in a row. I just do. By the same token, Texas hasn't played that kind of game yet.
Yeah, definitely.
In the coaching battle, I think Sark and Ryan Day, I think it's pretty close to even. I might give Ryan Day a slight edge as a play designer, but man, Sark is really good at that too. Sark might be a better play caller than Chip Kelly at this point. You know, I mean,
possible. Yeah.
Ultimately, I think the thing that convinced me here, and I'm going to reveal the pick here, I think I trust Quinn Ewers more than I trust Will Howard. And so I ended up going with Texas 34, Ohio State 31. Obviously, that means I have Texas covering the spread, and I also am taking the over on the points.
That line was 53. Sorry, I know I didn't mention it.
And I've got, obviously, at 65 here, right? So I think these offenses are going to be able to score. I think it's going to be a little bit more of a – not quite a shootout, but, you know, the game will be 21-21 at halftime. And maybe the defenses
gotta
will
– lock in and a half.
Yeah, the defenses will figure out in the second half and kind of clamp a little bit, and that's where you know, Texas outscores Ohio State 13-10 in the second half, that kind of thing. Truthfully – I could see this game having three different outcomes. I could see Ohio State rolling Texas, blowing them out.
Yeah.
I could see Ohio State winning a close, hard-fought game, and I could see Texas winning a close game. I don't think there's a scenario in my mind where I see Texas blowing them out. I also didn't think Ohio State would blow out Oregon either.
Yeah.
Right. No, so
that's where my mind.
Anything can happen in college football, and that's kind of the fun of it. So, truthfully, these predictions end up being worthless, but this is what I think is going to happen. So I'm predicting a Texas Notre Dame national championship.
Yeah, I got Ohio State Notre Dame. I definitely don't want to see Ohio State Penn State. I'll tell you that.
Of all the matchups that we could get,
I don't want that one.
That's the worst. If I had to rank it, like, okay, what's the matchup I think we're going to get? Notre Dame Texas, right?
Yeah.
What's a really fun matchup? In my mind, Notre Dame, Ohio State is.
Yeah.
I think Penn State, Texas is like it's a decent consolation. Cool. I wouldn't be mad at that. Penn State, Ohio State, I don't need to watch that game again.
That's what I'm saying.
Penn State
I don't want that.
I just don't think Penn State can beat Ohio State. I think that national championship would be a boring game.
Yeah. I don't want to watch that Big Ten championship either. Like, we need some diversity in there.
So no matter what, we need Notre Dame. One of Notre Dame or Texas needs to win is what we're saying. And that brings us to, you know, we got to finish up a little mini episode here with the preview. The banger of the week, or at least the banger of the day, because we're going to have another one a couple days from now.
Whoa.
And that is it's my day here. I've got coconut water. All right. Specifically the one that has pulp and it's pressed.
Do you have a specific brand by chance or just
Vita Coco?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I get you. And like the little box.
And so I went and got we had like the big box or whatever, and we were using it for different stuff. And then, you know, I was just drinking it straight. I was just pouring glasses and being like, I'm just drinking it. Right. So then, Jill got me we went to the store, we got cans. It's like my nighttime.
Yeah, it got like the little indents on them, right?
That's like one of my nighttime, like my favorite, like I'm just chilling at night before I go to bed, drink a coconut water.
I'll have to try it out. I haven't really been a fan of coconut water all too much. Like I feel like cocoa flavor just like really strong, you know, so I'll give it a shot.
These are it's not that strong, but I think it's just kind of like, it's kind of sweet, but it's not too sweet. And it's not got like the sugar and the caloric intake that like juice has. You know what I'm saying?
That's true. Definitely.
So it's kind of like a nice alternative in my mind. And I really enjoy it. And it's smooth too. Like it goes down refreshing and feel good about myself after I drink it. You know, I'm like, hey, I like a good coconut water. Shout out Vita Coco. You know, they do good stuff there.
Hey, if you guys are listening, just hook the boys up. Why not?
Sponsorship.
Get y'all rolling on advertisements. You know what I mean?
We're not asking for money live on the air, but we might be. all right. So we appreciate all you listeners. We hope that you enjoy the college football playoff. We hope you enjoyed that preview. And come on back before wildcard weekend and listen up to get prepared for those games as well. We'll have some film and deep dives ready to go for you, so you know exactly what to look for when you watch the games.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, we got our guy.
Ray Ray.
Sings out, Ray Ray.
Tony, I ain't about to go in front of Pony. I'ma show you just how bad I want it. Hear the passion, I promise I know this is my moment. I've been working, I've been putting music online. I've been patient, but I'm sitting on a gold mine. I had it since I'd have known time. Gotta rewind to understand my punchlines. In the past, I was overlooked, usually been the underdog player. This ain't nothing new to me. I can see the competition worry, so they stop and listen. I promise ain't no politicking with the opposition. This is something different, I'm something you've never seen. Writing lines and touching minds with every stream. 6 feet, buried beats, then say hollow and Apollo. I promise I'll be the hardest act to follow. I make way for the chosen one. Listen to the passion, man, he on the sun. One's up in the air if you notice him. Better tell him, make way for the chosen one. Make way for the chosen one. Listen to the passion, man, he on the sun. One's up in the air if you notice him. Better tell him, make way for the chosen one. Back home and the vision got them all tripping. I see the change, let me break it down, sit and listen. See where I'm from, they don't make it to the finish line. They have a dream, but they give up on it every time. So when they see me, they don't treat me like they used to. Probably cause they witnessing something that they ain't used to. I am not the usual, I am an anomaly. I'm just trying to multiply my paper like Monopoly. Code us out probably, will he make it possibly? Honestly, I'm tripping, man, name somebody that's stopping me. This already written, I'm just living on my prophecy. Regardless of what happened here tonight, I'll still be popping B. Man, I did this on my own too. Put myself in this position on my own too. You know who you are, I don't need to expose you. I'm looking at everybody who got it like I told you. Woo. Make way for the chosen one. Listen to the passion, man, he on the sun. One's up in the air if you notice him. Better tell him, make way for the chosen one. Make way for the chosen one. Listen to the passion, man, he on the sun. One's up in the air if you notice him. Better tell him, make way for the chosen one.